Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, March 25th, 2006. I'm Harley Schlanger and I'm your host today. Our topic for today's show will be the coming showdown over the bankruptcy of the U.S. auto sector. On the one side, you have the vultures like Kirk Kerkorian and hedge funds such as Cerberus. Along with them, the pro-globalization, pro-free trade economists. They are insisting that since the auto companies don't seem, and the suppliers don't seem to be able to compete with the cheap labor and no benefit markets overseas, then the U.S. auto sector should be hit with savage austerity and layoffs, and their machine tools sold off or melted down for scrap. This grouping is backed by Wall Street and the rating agencies like Standard & Poor's, which have been downgrading the auto companies and their suppliers. On the other side, you have the employees of these companies, many of whom are represented by the United Auto Workers, who have come to recognize that they're being consigned to a human scrap heap. There are also some in the engineering departments and in management of the companies who recognize the importance of the machine tool sector for the economy as a whole. And you have a small number of elected officials who are insisting that action must be taken to save the U.S. auto sector. Senator Hillary Clinton has sent out a letter demanding hearings. Hopefully we'll be hearing today from Representative Lamar Lemons III, a Democrat from Michigan who's among a growing number of state legislators who are demanding congressional action. And, of course, there's Lyndon LaRouche, who's been at the forefront of this battle since he identified more than a year ago that the General Motors and Ford were headed for bankruptcy. LaRouche's solution calls for emergency federal credit to retool the auto sector, to save the machine tool capability of the United States, as well as the engineering and labor force necessary to do the retooling. With us today to discuss this, in addition to Representative Lemons, will be Paul Gallagher from the Executive Intelligence Review, Mark Swayze from the United Auto Workers, and two members of the LaRouche Youth Movement, Bill Roberts in Detroit and Adam Sturman in Washington, D.C. Bill and Adam have been working with Paul and others to produce a documentary DVD to bring the nation to its senses, to wake up people so that we can get a mobilization for immediate emergency action to save the auto sector. So let me begin with Paul Gallagher. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Harley. Glad to be on.
Why don't you give us an update on where things stand following the so-called deal between General Motors, Delphi, and the United Auto Workers?
Well, I think you have to go from the broadest sense before getting to that deal, and it isn't really a deal. It's simply something that was announced as a fixed intention by these two companies to flush another 40,000 workers, roughly, between them out of the auto industry by buyouts. But if you stand back and look at the real situation, up until the late 1990s, there were a lot of layoffs going on among the big three in the U.S. auto sector, but there was also a lot of other companies being brought in, plants being established by other makers, by foreign makers. There was an expansion in the auto parts sector and so forth. There was maintaining the level of skilled employment in the, especially that represented by the unions and also others, skilled employment in auto. In 1999-2000, that suddenly changed. And in the course of the last six years, there has been a 20% net loss of production employment in the auto sector in North America. 20% in 5 years. Worse than that, with what has already been announced, such as this mass buyout we're talking about, which is merely a part of what's going on. Ford is doing the same thing at the same time. Chrysler is just being much more quiet about it. When you add those together, another 20 to 25% of the remaining auto employment, production employment, probably another quarter of it, will go in just 2.5 to 3 years, perhaps even faster than that, but in no more than 2.5 to 3 years. That will mean that within a decade, almost half of the production in the auto industry will have disappeared. Almost half of that capability and those jobs in less than 10 years will be gone. Now, why is this happening? There's no other reason but for globalization. Worldwide, the sales of autos are either stagnating or falling every place in the world except in India and last year in China because they suddenly cut the prices of cars dramatically. This fall is a result of the fall of real wages all over the world under the impact of globalization. So what we're trying to put a spear point on with this documentary film, which is now, I think, only days from being finished and ready to circulate, that spear point is aimed at focusing the blame for this on globalization where it belongs and making clear that the Congress has already been presented with a policy for intervention by which they could reverse it. And if they did so, they would begin reversing the destruction of globalization on the economy as a whole.
Okay, Paul, let me ask you a question. Assuming there may be some people out there who don't know why globalization is responsible, how do you answer that?
Well, three ways. Again, number one, there's a global fall in real wages. As Henry Ford once said famously, you can't build cars if you don't and sell them if you don't pay the people who build them enough to buy them. And we now have that condition that he warned against in the auto industry worldwide. People who build them are not paid enough to easily buy them. The fall of real wages is a fall of global sales of cars. This is because not only the auto industry, but every other industry, a major industry, has been looking for the cheapest price. I think in the auto industry, when they're dealing with suppliers, they say, you've got to give us the China price. Mm-hmm. Even though your quality may be better, even though your productivity may be better, that's all great for us, but you've got to also give us the China price. So that's the primary problem. The entire auto parts sector in particular is simply being, in wave after wave, moved out of the United States into Mexico, into the Caribbean, into Asia, into China. And what remains behind here, although it may appear to be remaining behind here, it's got to meet the China price. And therefore, it's throwing out workers right and left. As I said, 40,000 are to be flushed out by this latest announcement by GM and Delphi. 30,000 are to be flushed out by what Ford has announced. And for every auto assembly job like that that goes in the auto parts industry, you probably lose two or three. So you've got to multiply that by three or four, and you see the number of jobs actually being lost.
Let me bring in our representative on the show today from the United Auto Workers, Mark Swayze. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hello, Harley. How are you?
Fine, Mark. You're from UAW Local 969. You also are on the Council of Delphi Workers representing 21 plants. According to GM and Ford, you're the problem. You're paid too much. What's your sense of this so-called deal and the effects of this on immediately the workers who will lose their jobs, but then more broadly? What's your sense of this?
Well, Harley, let's start with I'm paid too much. You know, the cost of producing an automobile when it rolls down the assembly line and out the back door is 17%. To produce that automobile is the labor cost. And that has remained constant for more than 25 years. I don't feel that American production or American labor is the problem at this point. But I do feel that we're definitely under the gun. And the auto industry can build automobiles cheaper elsewhere, especially in the components division. It began back in the late 80s, about 88, I'm sorry, with Chrysler outsourcing 90% of their components division, Ford outsourcing 70%. General Motors did not do that. They felt that they could fill their plants with those two companies' work, actually producing parts for them. And as you see, we spun off Delphi from General Motors in 1999. So now today, because of globalization and outsourcing, we've set up competitive shops throughout the world with cheaper labor. Obviously, it's hard to compete with someone that makes a lot less money.
Well, as LaRouche has pointed out, that one of the reasons they can work for less money is that those countries don't have infrastructure, they don't have health care, they don't have transportation. And so, in a sense, it's the whole price not only of the workforce, but of the whole economy that's cheapened and driven down. And the benefit is passed on to the corporate cartels internationally. So, Mark, have you had a chance to talk with people at Delphi on the reaction to this mass buyout proposal and the cuts in wages and health care and benefits that they're trying to impose?
We're going to see the health care and wage packaged on Tuesday. It hasn't been released. It's in the hands of FedEx. We've been tracing it through FedEx. They say we will receive that on Monday. We are going to Detroit on Tuesday to have this rolled out to all presidents and chairpersons of General Motors and Delphi. And then, we'll have a rollout of the initial incentives on Tuesday. And then after that meeting, all Delphi presidents and chairs will get the wage and benefit package that would apply to those 21 plants.
What's the scuttlebutt so far? What do people think about this?
Well, I think there's a certain sigh of relief, Harley, and that doesn't mean anything because when you read a book, I'm certain, unless you start at the back, and that's the problem with this, this is only the first chapter. They only see the incentive program that they thought were possibly through the bankruptcy procedures could be taken away from them. Now they see that there's a window of opportunity for them to retire, but they're not looking ahead. And that's what the LaRouche organization's done since last year, is foreseeing what can take place, tell everybody, hey, this is happening, it's on the horizon, and what are the ramifications when this does happen? So what I'm saying is these people are sighing with relief. This is icing on the cake for them as a basic. But they don't see down the road what this is going to do to the structure and the economy of our country. And that's exactly what Paul was referring to.
And I want to go back to Paul on that. You're listening to The LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, March 25th, 2006. We're discussing the dismantling of the U.S. auto sector and the implications of that for both our country and for the world. If you want to email, we have a lot of people on, so we may have trouble getting the emails, but we'll be happy to take them. And if it's a good one, we'll get it on. So you can email us at radio@larouchepub.com. That's radio@larouchepub.com. So, Paul, let me go to you then. You heard what Mark just said. What are the implications for the economy of the dismantling of the U.S. auto sector?
Well, as we start the documentary out, since the hurricanes hit, the whole country has known that the infrastructure, the vital economic infrastructure of this country, was broken down, decayed, out of date, in some cases just non-existent. The everything from the locks and dams to the port infrastructure to the levees around New Orleans to the rail system that could have evacuated people. Our infrastructure has fallen apart, and it has been broadly realized. Now, again, since this big flap about the ports, people begin to get some idea of why that could be the case, where you have things like that going on, and then in Indiana it's come out that the governor has sold the main interstate highway through Indiana to a foreign company, the toll road. This infrastructure problem is the major problem facing the United States economy as a matter of simple survival as well as productivity. So what the auto crisis means in the sense of a branching point, as LaRouche identified a year ago, is the Congress has two choices: sit and watch half the auto industry disappear, as I outlined before, and thereby lose the main machine tool and skilled labor combination in the entire economy, just disperse it, break it up the way the machine tool shops in the Baltimore GM plant have been broken up in the last year since it closed. Do that across the country, or combine these two crises, find a solution for them by reorganizing auto, giving it a different mission, because there's 50% of it that isn't being one way or another isn't being intensively used in the production of automobiles and is in the process of being shut down. Give that a mission to build the most modern infrastructure, replacement of our infrastructure, from fourth generation nuclear power plants on a large scale to high speed rail and magnetic levitation rail. We have in the documentary the testimony directly in some of the wonderful interviews that Adam and Bill did directly from the local leaders in the UAW that they can, in these plants, build just about anything. They can retool fast to build just about anything. And if the industry now gets a congressional intervention to protect it, reorganize it, give it that mission, we solve both of these dire crises at the same time.
Mark, you've spoken quite a bit on the capability for retooling. For those who are not yet familiar with what you've been doing or what Lyndon LaRouche has proposed, what does retooling mean as far as the auto worker and the auto plants? And just how difficult would it be to transform the machine tools to produce vehicles for high-speed rail or parts for nuclear plants?
Well, Harley, it doesn't take a magic wand. All it takes is looking back into history and after World War II, or during World War II, actually, during World War II, when we converted our plants from components plants to wartime operations, when we built airplanes, we built army tanks, we built guns, we built all the war materials that were necessary. So to just say we have the capability, we have the ability, we have the trained people. And that is the key to this, is not to lose the machine tool capabilities of the industry.
So, Mark, the same tools that previously were producing cars and the same workers who were producing cars were able to turn around and start producing planes and other kinds of products?
Exactly. Exactly.
And then later, satellites, rockets, locomotives, and so forth. And we have the strong testimony of the founder of the UAW, Walter Reuther, who developed the plan, which may very well have been crucial in our victory in World War II, of turning within less than 6 months to mass aircraft production, which could not have been done without using the auto industry to do it. And then within a month of the end of the war in Germany, while the war was still on in Japan, Reuther then intervened again and called for a national corporation to organize the building of modern railroads in the auto plants, which had been building the arsenal of democracy in the war.
Well, Mark, is there discussion going on now among officials of the United Auto Workers of this alternative, the financial reorganization and retooling perspective?
Well, I would say there is, and they called for a Marshall Plan in February, and that was a reflection of the Franklin Delano Roosevelt Plan, obviously, and reorganization after World War II, and this is one of the key elements that we've pushed, I believe, since last April through different state legislatures, and to actually wake up Congress and say, hey, the auto industry has that ability. Put people to work in this country, and this country will work for itself. So to me, my understanding is, yes, the International Union has petitioned members of Congress to get involved and to look at infrastructure projects.
Well, now, you've been involved in a couple of trips to the Congress. We do have an email from Michael Stettler from California who thanks you for the busloads of people you've brought in previously for lobbying, but what's your sense of the Congress? Is this clear yet what has to be done, or what do you think is going to be necessary to move them?
Well, I guess if we don't vote for them, maybe we'll get a new set of ears in there, but What would it really take to wake this Congress up? I'm not certain, because we've been to Congress so many times. We've asked them to at least hear, and they have listened, believe me. But they've taken no action. And all of the proposed auto caucuses or what have you that they've wanted to form, the administration above even Congress, it's got, I don't know if the doors are locked or they're sitting on their hands with their hands on their ears at the same time. That was my observation. But, Harley, I don't know what it would take to wake them up, because the man on the street, it's obvious to them what's happening to our country.
Well, let's turn to one of the members of the LaRouche Youth Movement who has been knocking on the doors and organizing in Washington, D.C., who also was involved in putting together this documentary. Adam Sturman from Washington, welcome to the show.
Greetings.
Adam, why don't you just tell us, first of all, what's in the documentary?
Okay, well, the documentary contains the interviews that Bill and I shot, and it should also contain animations that have been put together with the help of both the youth movement and the EIR economic staff.
It does.
And it should also contain, thirdly, it should contain some video of the current and previous states of the city of Detroit and various manufacturing, various shots of manufacturing, both old and new, in Detroit. So together it should give a person a pretty good sense of the current state and the previous state of the auto sector.
I assume as soon as it's finalized and produced, you'll be delivering these to offices of the congressmen.
Yes, that is the idea. Ultimately, the goal would be to educate the Congress, both the House and the Senate, with these DVDs, but also for general circulation inside the population to get people to understand what the issue really is.
I think our listeners can play a big role in this, because we will be producing these not just for the Congress and for policymakers and legislators, but for the general public. And I'm going to give the number where someone can call in to order the documentary when it's produced at 888-347-3258. You can call in and say you heard about it on the LaRouche Show, and we'll send them out. It's 888-347-3258. I'll also now bring in Bill Roberts, who's with the LaRouche Youth Movement in Detroit. Bill, welcome to the show.
Hello, Harley.
Now, was there anything that surprised you looking at some of this old footage of how the auto industry was built up from literally nothing and became such a powerful influence on every aspect of modern life? Anything that struck you from the work you did on the documentary?
Well, I didn't get to view very much of the National Archive videos yet, so some of that will be a surprise to me. But just from some of the description that I got from people who I interviewed, which included local elected officials and also UAW presidents, was just the quality of the ability to be able to retool and to do just about anything. It's something that I think it served to educate the Congress on real economics, because there's still a lot of sophistry going on around being able to keep the system going and to continue to believe in rules of economics that just simply don't work anymore. And when you're looking at the country being on the verge of losing a sector of the economy, such as the machine tool sector, which is collapsing so rapidly. And if we communicate a sense of what that means and what a tragedy that is, then I think we can really shock the hell out of some people on this. But we have to – but what surprised me was just the rate at which some of the high-skilled sectors of the economy of the auto sector, rather – are being depleted very quickly, such as the tool and die industry, and just everything that these that this sector can do. It's just incredible in these discussions that I had, the description of this overall process.
Well, you mentioned the problem of sophistry. I have in my hands an example of that from the Detroit Free Press, an article titled GM's Big Challenge, Operate Smaller. And then next to that, Plan for Survival, up to 113,000 eligible for GM buyouts, opening door for Delphi exits. Now then, there's another article, GM Pricing Plan Starting to Work, despite the fact that February sales fell further. And then today's Detroit Free Press, Healthcare Threatens to Swallow City Budget. Paul, how do they get away with this kind of sophistry?
Well, it's not a matter of how they get away with it. This is a strategy. This is a very definite strategy. As you were reading those things, I was thinking of the Washington Post yesterday. Because this, you know, we're in a battle here for the possibility of the Congress to move. It's got to move. You got half the auto industry disappearing. All right, how does sophistry cover that up? You have, on the one hand, the Washington Post yesterday with a big business section article. Of course, the Washington Post is read throughout the Congress by the staffs, by the members, and so on and so forth, and they're very well aware of what they're doing. A big business section article saying GM's turnaround plan is working. They make the same absurd claim about sales in the face of the sales report that just came out for February and the first half of March, which is even worse.
Mm-hmm.
They make the absurd claim that this drastic shrinkage of the company is going to allow it to compete better. Now, you take a company with a $300 billion debt and you shrink it down to half its size. How much easier is it going to be for that company to handle that $300 billion of debt?
So you're saying it's actually beyond sophistry to just plain outright lying.
This is lying in order to prevent the Congress from moving on what they know LaRouche has presented to them over and over and over again. The last week, we had lots of meetings with offices, in some cases several meetings in one week with the same office. They're working, the Democrats are working on a platform for their campaign. And LaRouche has just brought out this bombshell prolegomena to a party platform, and they all think that it is a bombshell, and they want to understand how to use this. And the interest in the last couple of weeks in Congress has really been peaking in what LaRouche put in that program. But why don't they act? Because you have, number one, these threats, in effect, or big lies from the Washington Post and similar placed media. Number two, the Felix Roatan factor in the Democratic Party, which we should discuss further.
I want to discuss that. We have a question from Berlin on that, and I do want to take up the Roatan question when we come back. We're going to be heading into a break in just a few seconds. We're talking about the collapse of the U.S. auto sector, the drive to get Congress to act on that, and the broader implications of the collapse and dismantling of this productive sector of the U.S. economy. You're listening to Paul Gallagher, Mark Swayze, and two leading representatives of the LaRouche Youth Movement. This is the LaRouche Show for Saturday, March 25th, 2006. The LaRouche Show is live on the web every Saturday from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, and we take up the issues of the day in the only way you can truly understand them, from the standpoint of real history, real economics, the Vernadskian approach to human economy. Lyndon LaRouche will be doing a webcast toward the end of this month, April 27th. In the meantime, we have every week the Executive Intelligence Review available. Paul also mentioned the report written by Lyndon LaRouche, the prolegomena, essentially what you need to know to draft a competent party platform. And that's available if you call us at 888-347-3258. This is the central topic of discussion for Democratic Party officials who are serious about winning in 2006. You can't wait till the summer or September or October. We learned that from 2004 election. John Kerry didn't really start talking about the economy with any effectiveness until October. You have to win a landslide now in March and April, and that's why LaRouche put out this platform. So call us at 888-347-3258 to get a bulk copy sent to you. All right, so we're back with our panel on the auto sector. I wanted to turn again to Mark Swayze from the United Auto Workers in Columbus, Ohio. Mark, as you talk to people in Delphi, the workers you represent at the United Auto Workers, are they clear that this is it's really not a restructuring in the standard sense? It's tearing down the company. Is that becoming clear to people?
Well, not to everyone, Harley. It's still personal. They're still saying, what's in it for me? I would say 70% of the people are still personal. But there are quite a few people that are getting on board and understanding. Well, we put literature out as often as we can get it, and they do understand that there is a crippling nature taking over this country, and they are concerned about it. So, yes, that number is growing all the time.
And, Bill, are you finding that from the organizing you're doing in Detroit among auto workers and people affected directly by the shutdown of the sector?
Well, people, it's definitely causing people to become more political, for sure. And we're finding people more willing to read. Well, I mean, just about everyone is grabbing up the literature that we're getting out and reading everything that LaRouche has to say. So that's going well.
Okay. Paul, you mentioned Felix Rohatyn, the Lazard Frères banker who's out to dismantle the U.S. economy. We have a question from Christopher Emerson from the Berlin LaRouche Youth Movement in Germany. He said, I was wondering if there's any link between Rohatyn, Schultz, and Cheney and what Kirk Kerkorian is doing to General Motors in the United States. Kerkorian looks like an economic hitman. So would you like to comment on that?
Yeah, he's putting his finger on the hedge fund factor in this. The hedge funds are moving to try to tear what remains of the auto companies apart and literally split them up into little coupons that can be refinanced and resold among the regional banks in Japan and among the credit unions in Europe and God knows where else with derivatives. This is what's happening to General Motors. It's the exterior pressure coming from Kirk Kerkorian, Jerome York, and similar hedge funds like the Appaloosa hedge fund, which is headquartered in New York, which just got the bankruptcy court in Delphi's case to put it on the bankruptcy committee. All of these hedge funds have the same strategy, which is to try to put maximum pressure on the companies to maximize the layoffs, maximize the savings, pay out to the shareholders, and shrink the companies. And effectively what you're seeing is the damage that they're doing. The connection in that way with Rohatyn goes through the Kohlberg, Kravitz, Roberts, to which he's connected, the firm that's that just bought part of GMAC and is in competition to buy the entire financing arm of General Motors. But more importantly, in the Congress and in the Democratic Party, including at the state level around the country, the fundamental battle over the issue of infrastructure and over the issue of whether this is going to be a rebuilding a policy to rebuild the economy from the Democratic Party, that battle is between Lyndon LaRouche and his forces and LaRouche's identification of the legacy of Franklin Roosevelt on one side and Felix Rohatyn of Lazard Frères Bank and of the Democratic Democratic Leadership Council, the Lieberman right wing of the Democratic Party, and Rohatyn's friends in finance, funders, big money in the Democratic Party, who have a so-called infrastructure strategy which requires burying the legacy of FDR. And that's the way Rohatyn has put it in the past. This week, this coming week in EIR magazine, LaRouche has commissioned something which is going to severely up the temperature in this fight. We are going to put out a full expose of Rohatyn as a fascist. Rohatyn, along with George Shultz on the Republican side, as fascists who would be comfortable in the cabinet of Mussolini, who would have been close collaborators of Hjalmar Schacht, who became Hitler's finance minister, and Roatan as a fascist in the Democratic Party, who one runs up against every time one discusses investment in infrastructure with any elected representative of the Democratic Party. This is the fight that's got to be had. Right out there in California, for example, where you are, Harley, in 2002 came out a strategy for infrastructure which suspiciously sounded like what Arnold Schwarzenegger tried later.
Mm-hmm.
But this strategy was signed and circulated by Felix Roatan along with Philip Angelides, who is now the, I guess, the state treasurer of the state and the likely Democratic candidate for governor in next week's election. It's a call for very small spending on infrastructure, but done primarily through sucking in the money from public pension funds.
Right.
Taking the workers' pension fund money, as Roatan did 30 years ago in New York City, and forcing it into the bonds, which supposedly are going to build a little bit of infrastructure for the country. That fascist approach by a man who is a fascist, who represents fascist banking circles, that's what we're going to take on and blow a hole in this week with the EIR and in subsequent exposés. And if anything can get the Congress off dead center, the Democrats in the Congress off dead center on intervening in the auto crisis, it'll be to a LaRouche move to really destroy what Roatan represents.
Well, some of us have seen the preprint copies of the articles by Lyndon LaRouche and Jeffrey Steinberg, and they're quite clear that we are dealing with something that we saw as a pilot program in Chile implemented by fascist military forces directed by Schultz and Roatan in 1973. And the first thing they did was privatize the pension plan. This is something they tried again last year, and our intervention stopped it. But I would encourage people that this is the kind of material that should be circulated with the platform. And we'll give you the number again, but people should be working on it, reading it, to understand why we're saying this is fascism, and then to go out aggressively and organize. Now, I have something here I think is quite interesting. I'd like Paul and Mark to comment on this. There's an article from last October on Cerberus, which is one of the leading hedge funds, which is making a push to take over, or was involved in the fight to take over GMAC. Cerberus has $16 billion of investors' assets on its book. When it first started, it had $10 million in 1992. Now it's a powerhouse with owning companies with more sales than McDonald's, 3M, or Coca-Cola. When it started to expand, among the people who invested in Cerberus were Donald Rumsfeld, who in 2001 put some money in. And, of course, Rumsfeld is a partner with Schultz and Roatan in the privatization of military and intelligence, and also Michael Steinhardt, the hedge fund legend, as Businessweek calls him, who's a director of Cerberus's lending arm. Steinhardt is another one of these activists in the Democratic Party against LaRouche. Now, these hedge funds go into purchasing companies, and also KKR, Colbert Kravis Roberts, who I wrote about back in the early 90s, they go in and take these over to make money from them. How do they make that money, Paul?
Well, in the case of Cerberus, this is the exposure of what they're trying to do with General Motors Acceptance Corporation is adding materially to the collapse of the debt of General Motors. The more it comes out what Cerberus intends to do if it's able to buy 51% or more of GMAC, the worse the situation looks for GM as a whole, because Cerberus is the leading bidder. They intend to, as I was indicating, to chop up their majority share of GMAC into perhaps as many as 25 pieces and syndicate it out among banks and other institutions in which they, as a hedge fund, already have investments. Now, each of those syndicators is going to be making a demand that the rate of payout to shareholders from GMAC and from GM through GMAC be increased In other words, that the company be the company's productive operations be further looted in order to maximize the shareholder return that these hedge funds get. That's exactly what Appaloosa, by putting itself on the board of creditors right. in the Delphi bankruptcy, that's what it's publicly demanding. They want the maximum amount of capital to come out of that company and be paid out to the shareholders, therefore the maximum number of layoffs, the maximum number of plant closings. This is the hedge fund strategy. And when you get these hedge funds get this big, you're talking about forces capable, they think, of literally privatizing the nation's remaining infrastructure as well as its military and security operations. Literally, it's war fighting and it's military intelligence operations. But they certainly think they can privatize what's left of our infrastructure all over the United States. And that's what Roatan's strategy is.
And that's the fight over the restoration of the Franklin Roosevelt legacy that Lyndon LaRouche is insisting upon, because it was impossible for hedge funds to do this until everything was deregulated. And deregulation, privatization are two major tools that are used as part of the globalization. Mark, let me ask a question of you, because I know you're not simply involved in the working at Delphi and representing the union there, but you also are part of a community, and you see the effects of these kinds of shutdowns on communities throughout the Midwest. This is part of what we're documenting in the documentary, that you're losing cities, you're losing tax bases. To what extent I know of Columbus, Ohio, because of insurance and banking, claims to be immune to this, but from your travels, to what extent is the shutdown of auto affecting the what we might call quality of life in the communities where these plants are located?
Well, it's real obvious it has a reciprocating effect and a social ills to the community when this takes place. In relation to the people that are working, you see a loss of population in most of those communities. You see higher levels of poverty and crime associated. You see the health care decline, obviously the tax base, and then your school systems are also at risk because of the loss of those basic structures. So what, Harley, this thing goes, and LaRouche organization did a great study on Baltimore, Maryland, after the loss of the steel industry. And then again, you can see the same thing in several cities in Michigan with the loss of the auto industry. So the downward trend of the social ills, or the uprise of social ills because of the downward trend, is going to increase no matter where it takes place. And you see, just in this country alone, we talk about so many times, 100 automobiles being built represents 27 jobs. Those 27 direct jobs related to the auto industry also have indirect effect, because those people that aren't earning an income, we'll say, aren't also supporting these very same items that I talked about, or even the small businesses in their area. So this thing just has a trickle-down effect, and you're going to see, you'll see devastation. Batavia, for instance, they with the loss of the Ford plant, they've already predicted, you know, what it's going to take place in that community, and they're just devastates them. So the loss is tremendous, Harley, and this is the thing that I'm saying about our own members. They're looking at what's being offered, that little bit of icing on a cake, but they just don't see the whole picture, what's taking place in this country.
Well, I mentioned earlier the situation in Detroit. According to today's Detroit Free Press, the cost of health care is going to go up by at least $173 million for the city. And this is for employee health care costs, which means that they're going to be, that it will have an effect on snow removal, senior citizen services, street lighting, all aspects of social welfare. So anyone who does not understand what Lyndon LaRouche once called the worldwide cup of coffee, that increased productivity actually improves the whole economy, whereas when you start chopping away at it, it also has nonlinear effects. Adam, as you mentioned the use of animations in the documentary, did you do animations that were of this sort, showing the spin-off effects of these plant shutdowns and the communities, or what kind of animations did you do?
Well, no, I haven't participated directly in the animations work yet. I've been in discussion here in D.C. with people that have been included directly into that work. But personally, no, I have not been included yet, but I hope to go down sometime very soon in Leesburg to work on it.
Okay. But Harley, Adam and Bill spent a very extraordinary day with Lamar Lemons, state representative from Detroit, and maybe they can say what they saw.
Yeah, I could comment on just because one thing, we took a look at a case study of Highland Park, which is, it's like a municipality which is only about 2.5 square miles. It's a municipality within Detroit. And this is sort of a, like I said, a case study, because you definitely see what's happened. This is a city that, because of the shutdown of the employment, this was, of course, the home of the Model T Ford originally, mm-hmm. and set up as a town by Ford for the employees who worked in probably in the factories and also management and so forth. So it was a upper middle class area, a couple decades ago, I'd say. Today, if you look at this area, and we got a lot of footage from this particular neighborhood, you have elementary schools closed down. You have beautiful public libraries and other public structures that are now closed down. It's looking like a ghost town. You have blocks, and this goes for the rest of Detroit too. The drainage is not draining away the water. You just see a complete collapse of the tax revenue base. And what you mentioned, Harley, in terms of how insurance costs and things like this are going up, this is a perfect example of how when you have part of the community becoming very poor, that everyone becomes poor. Because the cost, anyone who can't get out of the city, the cost of things like auto insurance and healthcare become extremely costly because of the collapse of infrastructure, the rise of crime.
Well, we saw that in terms of
a situation where outside the city of Detroit, the suburbs as well are getting near, I'd say if not bankruptcy, they're closing down schools and things like this. So that's what we've seen.
Yeah, we saw the same thing with the destruction to New Orleans, the inability for whole sections of the population to leave under conditions of emergency. Well, Adam, let me go back to you, since you weren't working on the animations. What in particular struck you from, what did you learn from working on the documentary?
I think what I've learned the most when working in the documentary was the divide in the minds of the congressmen and legislators here in D.C. What I mean by that is that both the House and the Senate have an idea of what's going on in the United States that doesn't necessarily correspond to what's actually happening. And what develops over a period of time is that inside the Beltway of D.C., an idea about how the United States actually functions as a nation is really not in correspondence with the areas that I saw in Detroit. And, you know, some legislators in the House and in the Senate may have a certain idea, maybe a very localized idea of what's going on in their particular part of the country, but nobody can really see the phenomena throughout the entire nation and put it together as a whole. I think that's what really struck me the most, is this disconnect here in D.C. with what's going on in the rest of the country. I mean, I think Bill laid out most of the details pretty well about the different types of destruction that is going on.
Well, I think that's why it'd be quite essential for anybody who's running for office or anybody who's working on a campaign to make sure you get this new DVD when it comes out, and also to get the EIR coming regularly, because unless you have this picture, you're sort of left with a very tiny sense of maybe your own neighborhood or your own community in trouble. But you don't realize it's a whole situation. Lyndon LaRouche was saying the other day that he doesn't really believe these polls that show that Cheney still has 18% support. David Letterman made a joke that one of the top 10 reasons that Cheney should stay in office is to keep working until he gets Bush's popularity rating down to 1%. But you see the anger in the population. And Mark, again, on this question of the disconnect, do you think people have given up on the possibility of moving the situation in Washington, or they just don't know what to do?
Harley, it's complacency. I think most people feel that the majority of the auto workers are going to get taken care of. We've had great leadership in the UAW, and they've negotiated benefits for us that have been palatable in the past. But to say that's going to lead us through the future, that's not going to be the fix. And obviously not going to be the solution. So I would say that the only thing that's made sense to me since a year ago was to put this country back to work. And that's proven itself.
Mm-hmm.
But also in Ohio, because of the work of Mark and other people in the UAW leadership positions and because of the LaRouche Youth Movement's work there, we include in the DVD sections of an entire hearing, which was held in the state legislature, on LaRouche's retooling and saving auto proposal. This was introduced there by Representative Catherine Barrett of Cincinnati. She's already had, I think now, three hearings around the state and is literally barnstorming along with others in the legislature, other Democrats in the legislature, to get Congress called on officially by the state of Ohio to intervene and save and retool auto. This is happening on the state level in a lot of places. In fact, just in the last week or so, there's been debate involving testimony from the LaRouche Youth Movement in the Rhode Island state legislature, where there's a similar backing for LaRouche's retooling proposal. It's now been introduced and is under debate in both houses of the Kentucky state government. It's been introduced into the New Jersey legislature and I believe also recently Pennsylvania, and previously had already been introduced and in some cases passed in Michigan and in counties and cities within Michigan. So there is a demand. As demand for this action, there's also very powerful attempts to block Congress, as I said, from acting. And we can't forget that Roatan and the very powerful financier circles that he and George Shultz represent, that they are just as aware of the potential of LaRouche's solution here as we are, and they are determined to block it. And really, we have to break the logjam in the Congress, because if there's no action from Congress, then, as Mark's indicated, people will tend to think that nothing can be done. But right now, we have a great deal going on. We've got to blow a hole in Congress on the issue of Felix Roatan's fascist policy, and that they're burning their hands by handling this fascist policy in the Democratic Party. They're actually circulating and promoting an infrastructure policy which could have come out of Berlin in the 30s or Rome in the 20s under Mussolini, and they're calling that a democratic discussion of infrastructure. We need to burn their hands on that.
Well, I think the fact that we were able to extend it into this question of national security at this conference at Middlebury College in, I believe, 2004, there's a quote from a person who is now working for the National Security Council, Fever, I believe is his name, who said that the privatization plans that they have for the defense sector and the military and the intelligence community is neo-feudal. He used that term, and he said it's like the British East India Company. Now, We've been writing that in the EIR for quite a while, but now we find that this is what Roetten and Schultz, at a conference that they co-sponsored, put forward as the solution to the military. So you see that there's no coincidence that they're also out to destroy the auto sector of the United States, the machine tool sector. And I'd like to, we have about 5 minutes left, I'd like to just pick up with both Adam and Bill. A major part of this whole operation is part and parcel of the destruction of science education and to dumb down the population so that the capacity that we have that we've built up in the auto sector or the space sector with NASA, we've lost that. When the two of you go out and organize, to what extent are you seeing now people catching on, for example, the enthusiasm that's beginning to develop for nuclear energy? One of the things LaRouche called for is real science. How do you see the connection between what we've been talking about for most of this last hour in the auto sector with this drive to restore a real science education to the country? Adam, you have any thoughts on that? Adam, you there? Bill?
I'm here, yeah. I've been asking everyone what they think about nuclear energy, and some of the responses that I'm starting to get are quite good, actually. I think a lot of the baby boomer generation still has hang-ups on this question of nuclear energy, which is more emotional than anything. But I think with the youth, it's very similar, you know, to anything when you're intersecting youth in the population, is that their thinking might be completely wrong on something. They might say, well, isn't nuclear energy bad for the environment? Isn't there this whole problem of waste disposal? And can't we just build solar panels and windmills and soft energy? And, you know, they have a whole bunch of assumptions about it, but they're willing to work through the question of why we need nuclear power, because they realize that obviously there's something that's not working in the economy. Obviously all the experts in economics and so forth don't really know what they're doing and are willing to re-examine anew their assumptions about science and economics and figure out why you know nuclear power is necessary, figure out why there's a difference between just producing energy versus the conception that LaRouche is bringing up in his papers in the education of the youth around this question of power and the role that principles that represent discoveries of the human mind, the role that those principles play in being absolutely essential for the economy, and why you need an approach that's vectored on implementing new discoveries and new technologies into your economy. That's what the young people respond to, and that's how we're being able to build up a growing number of youth in this movement. And that's also the type of question that we're taking into Congress, which is shaking things up there as well.
Well, we're down to about the last minute and a half. Mark, you've been on tour in Germany and Mexico to bring some of these ideas about retooling and machine tools to audiences there. You've also been in Washington, D.C. You're in the middle of the fight now on the efforts to shut down Delphi. I assume you still are optimistic that we can win this fight.
I'll always be optimistic, Harley. I think that it'll be never too late. It's never too soon also. I think we would have had a better chance last spring when we initiated this, but I know that it's never too late. And I guess rather than take up a lot of time, I'd just like to say that there's a lot of countries out there that'll accept our jobs, they'll accept our engineers and our technology. But, you know, I've taken a little survey, and I wanted to outsource the White House. But there's not a country yet that seems to want to accept the present administration. So I don't know what it's going to take to wake these folks up.
It's the old Cheney problem.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do with Cheney except send him back to Wyoming, I think. Well, we're coming to the end, I'd like to thank our panelists today, Paul Gallagher from the EIR, Mark Swayze from the United Auto Workers. Mark, always a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you, Harlan.
And Bill Roberts and Adam Sturman from the LaRouche Youth Movement. This show will be archived on LaRouchePub.com, so you can pick it up and play it for your friends. Also, call us 888-347-3258 to get literature. Thank you very much. Talk to you next week.
Take care.
Thank you.